Value Invest Asia, this is The Asian Mavericks. We explore the hidden stories of successful founders, business leaders, and investors in Asia. Here's your host, Stanley Lim.
Welcome to the Season 2 of The Asian Mavericks, where we go across Asia to interview founders, business leaders, and investors in the region. Through our program, we really hope to help you understand more on what's happening in the brain of all these business leaders when they're managing their business, and why they make the decision that they make. This month, we're very privileged to be able to speak to the CEO of Equities Tracker Holding Berhad, Alvin Wong. Equities Tracker is a company that is just listed on the LIP market or Bursa Exchange this month. They provide financial data for many of the brokerages and financial firms in Malaysia. And they are also one of the most prominent value investing educators provider in the country. I met Alvin about 2 years ago and they engaged me to speak for some of their events and have been following up on their development ever since. The history of Equity Tracker actually goes back more than 40 years ago from Alvin's father, Jim, who was one of the co-founders of the original company. So in the interview, you hear from Alvin on how the company has really changed over the years and why did they make the decision to list in Bursa Malaysia. And also, what are some of their future plans that they are already planning in the works for the company going forward? As full disclosure, I am considered a subcontractor for the company as I do speak in some of their events. And also, I'm now a minority shareholder of the company after subscribing to the IPO as well. So please note that this interview is only for general and education purposes only, and in no way a recommendation of the company. So do study up and do your own research if you are looking at the company and before making any investment decision. Without further ado, this is the CEO of Equities Tracker Holding Berhad, Alvin Wong. Enjoy.
Yep, I'm very excited to talk to the CEO of Equities Tracker today, Mr. Alvin Wong. Hi, Alvin.
Hi, Stanley. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your IPO.
Thank you.
It's quite a milestone for you guys, don't you say?
Yes, it's been a very long process, extremely long process. We are very happy to be where we are today.
Yeah.
Very grateful, you know, to all our advisors, our board members, everyone who has contributed to the success of this year.
Yeah. So maybe just get a sense from you, how's the feeling among the team members? Are you guys very excited or just totally burnt out at the moment?
I think if we draw our excitement sort of scale, it looks exactly like a roller coaster. It goes up and down.
Like the stock market.
Yeah, like the stock market up and down. I think many times throughout this process, we felt like just giving up.
Okay. Interesting. We'll dive right deeper into why that is. But from my understanding, Equities Tracker actually has been around for quite some time in Malaysia. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about the history and the origin of the company?
Yeah. So Equities Tracker was founded over 40 years ago, 1976.
Wow.
My dad was one of the original founders. So it's made of a total of three founders.
Okay.
And what happened was back then, he saw the need for financial information.
Right.
So if you can imagine during the 70s and 80s where iPads, phones or computers were not as commonplace or didn't even exist, or the internet didn't even exist, right? He realized that anyone who went into the stock market mostly went in on rumors, news driven, right? Whatever other people are telling them.
Okay.
He realized that there should be a better way to do it. Is there a more scientific method, what we call data driven investment decisions, right?
Okay.
So that's where he started. First place he looked was the annual reports.
Right.
So of course if you look at the annual reports, you realize it's
no one really reads them.
No one really reads them. And I think it's not it's like a legal document, right? So unless you're properly trained, it's not easy to understand end to end what it actually means, right? So what he did was he actually started to take all this information out, put it in a standardized, normalized format,
right? Okay.
So that any investor could come in and actually use that information to make more informed decisions.
Okay. So at the beginning, he was tabulating all the data from these annual reports.
Yes, correct.
And publishing them as a book, or
Yeah, so actually we tried several formats. We tried print.
Okay.
Very expensive. Not easy. I think also the market wasn't quite ready for it. But a lot of the print eventually went on to the newspapers.
Ah.
So he sold a lot of the information to the newspapers,
right,
because
okay.
that was the main source of information dissemination
yep,
back
yep,
then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh,
before the internet.
Oh, that's pretty smart, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. So we had clients like the Star and Business Times.
Okay.
If you remember the pull-out section from the business sections,
yep,
all the lot of numbers
yes.
behind, yeah, that's all generated by
okay,
yeah,
okay, interesting.
Us, yeah.
Right, okay.
So we're one of the pioneers in doing this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess because it has been around for quite some time, so definitely when you're born, your dad is already running this business, right?
Yeah, I mean, as early as I can remember, my child memory is, my dad has always been in business, so
okay.
you always see him going to work and coming back really late.
You can say
I was sort of, I grew up in that environment.
Does he immerse you guys into the business, or he sort of have it quite separate? Do you know what he's doing when you're young?
I always had a little bit of understanding, because he always tried to explain it in as simple terms as possible. But generally, yes, I won't know the intricacies, but I sort of understood what he was doing. But at that point, did I understand the importance of what he was doing? Probably not so much.
But do you also have interest in numbers and in analyzing data yourself?
Yeah, I think the funny thing was when I was much younger, I actually wanted to become a doctor. I don't know why.
Okay.
It should be very weird, right?
No pressure from your parents?
No. Actually, my grandma. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, she said, you know, doctors are good, right?
Okay.
But I think in terms of, so I naturally went the physics, chemistry, art stream, and the science stream, and I was pretty bad at it.
Okay.
Then I found that I was probably a bit more natural when I did economics,
right? Okay.
And accounting, it just became easier to understand. So then, you know, I thought, you know, why don't I do something that I understand better and I'm more familiar with?
Yeah. I see. Okay. And, yeah. and is that the subject you chose in your university as well?
Yeah, yeah. So I did a bachelor of commerce in investment finance.
Right. Okay.
And accounting,
okay,
and information management, right? So those were the three areas that
okay
I majored in.
Okay, and then after you graduate, did you went out to work or you joined the family business straight away?
So actually, while I was studying, so when I did my postgrad, it was part time.
Okay.
So I held several jobs when I was studying part time.
Okay.
So I graduated when I was 20, actually, my first degree. So my second degree, it was spread over 2 years on a part time basis. So
okay.
that I got some work experience there. So one of the things that I used to do was I actually used to teach accounting information systems
right.
as a tutor in a university. You know, part time.
I see.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
okay. So that's
amongst other things.
That's where you started to hone your talking skills on stage.
Yeah, actually, I was quite nervous because I was only 21.
Yep. Most of your students are older than you.
Yeah, and I was. It was quite a bit scary, but you know,
okay,
I did it
okay.
anyway.
When did you finally decide, or did something happen there for you to decide that you want to come back and join the family business?
So in the 2 years or so, what I was doing was I started my own little business.
Okay.
When I was studying, yeah. And then actually, I was supposed to do another year to complete my master's. But then my dad was like, better come back. Then begrudgingly, I came back.
Okay.
And I think when I started the first year in this business, I was just trying to understand all the moving parts and sort of move me around different things to do.
Okay.
But I think as I understood more and more what they were doing, I then saw the massive potential that was about to come, right?
Right.
So then I focus a lot into mm-hmm. the business and sort of steer it with my dad.
Okay,
let's
dive a little bit into that. So when you first joined the company, give us a sense, how does it actually look like? Because I know ET has has morphed a lot over the years, and what is business at that time might not be the same as it is now. So when you first joined, how is Equities Tracker like?
I think when I first joined, so what happened was the data business, you know, for because we've been collecting data in listed companies for almost 40 years. So that part never changed. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was the medium of how it was delivered changed.
Okay.
So from print, at one point we were also doing like diskettes, floppy disks, if
okay.
you remember.
Selling
diskettes. Yeah, okay. Then people will come and pick it up and then go and download it. Okay, right?
Cool.
So okay. The information remained the same, really, like net profit will still be net profit, revenue will still be revenue, right?
Okay.
But the medium of how it was being disseminated changed, okay. right?
Mm-hmm.
So, back in 2000, so we launched the website in 1999, the first
okay.
iteration, but it's morphed many, many times since.
Right. Yeah.
But that was really just the beginning of online trading.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, if you remember the dot-com 2000,
yeah.
99, 2000, 2001, right? That era, you know. I think there was still a lot of debate whether online trading will take off. And we're going to see that sort of landscape at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Why is because, like today, everyone has a mobile phone and your mobile phone is a lot more powerful than probably a desktop PC that you bought 25 years ago,
definitely,
right?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So the even the computer was not commonplace.
Mm.
So I think there was a big debate whether this was going to go, and then some people tried to build their own online trading portal,
uh-huh.
And everyone was trying to offer live prices. So that was that scenario back mm-hmm. then. Of course, now the market has sort of consolidated.
Yep.
And but we were very clear where the objective wanted to be. We realized that where everyone was focused on a lot of technology, just core technologies, my dad's focus was said we need to be content creators, right?
Yep.
Because ultimately, content is the one that will drive eyeballs,
the traffic,
the traffic, right?
Okay,
yeah. So we focus a lot on content,
right? Yeah. Okay. And so that's, I guess, in the late 90s that you joined, and then just at the start when you guys are trying to digitalize a lot of your content, when do you know that it has started to gain traction? Is there a moment or a point in time where you feel that yeah, we can go all in this one, and maybe not focus so much on print anymore?
I think at that point in time we already had stopped print.
Okay.
But there was a period where we stopped print and online wasn't available yet.
Right.
So there was a bit of a gap during that period. But I think what was interesting is when we first when my dad first started the website, I think he first started to market it. We marketed to retail, which was actually quite tough then because very few people actually had computers or internet.
Yep.
Internet, by the way, that was a luxury where you still had to dial up on your modem and they charge you per minute, not per gig, per meg, right? But they charge you per minute how long you use, so it's fairly expensive. So retail was quite tough. So what we did was we started approaching stockbrokers. I think the first stockbroker that we got was back in 2002.
Okay.
It took another 2 years for another stockbroker to be on our, our client list, right?
Okay.
And then, you know, 2005, we added one, and 2007. So we realized that it started to take off because when the industry started consolidating,
mm-hmm.
People realized, okay, this is something that I don't need to do myself,
right.
And I can outsource it.
Okay.
So it's sort of during that period where it started to take off. Then we started education back in 2007.
2007. Okay, maybe you share with us why is there a need to go into education in the first place?
Okay. So that's a good question. So, we see a lot of education providers, and it was sort of a space that we got into it as a response to the market demand.
Okay.
So we didn't get into education just for sake of education. We started with the website first mm-hmm. and with all the data. And when we started selling it to the stockbrokers, mm-hmm. a lot of their clients that use that data came back and asked us, how do you use it?
Okay.
So, and we got a lot of requests, how do you use it? Why do you display it this way? How do I make sense of, I mean, great, you have numbers, but how do I use it?
Yep.
So that was when we started at the request of some of our brokers, we actually ran educational sessions for their clients.
I see. Okay.
So that was when we started. So we really, so when we did it in 2007, 08, then we realized that there was actually a hunger or a demand for that.
Okay.
And really what we did was we crafted our own syllabus based on the techniques that we've used ourselves for the data that we create.
Wow. Okay. And, that's how it big off.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And now we're 12 years later.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. Okay. When you're, is the idea for going into education or spearheading the education arm, is that mostly driven by you, or was your father at that time still quite optimistic about it, and he was also pushing for it?
I think we were both main drivers in that part of the education. So he wrote a lot of the early or the foundational series of classes. So what I learned about investing, I learned a lot from him.
Yep.
And so we both spearheaded that part. So I'm a trainer myself as well. Mm-hmm. So you know, as we went along, that's
and you morph it into what it is
today. It morphed into what it is today, yeah.
Okay. Can you share with us a little bit, so for Equity Stragger, besides the data business that you talk about and also the educational business, is there any major other part of the business that is revenue generating for you guys?
Yeah, those are actually two main revenue drivers, which is the sale of the data, wholesale or retail. And of course, with the education, it comes with the use of the data, naturally, right?
Okay.
So it's a very symbiotic relationship. Right. We realize that as our education, number of students that came in through for our education series, our subscription rate also went up,
right?
Naturally, because now people knew how to use it, then they could use it, So it's very symbiotic.
I understand you also run like a members club. For your students, so that they can go and visit. At the end of your theater hall now, I saw a lot of company visits that you guys organize and go to over the years. Right.
Yeah. So one of the things that so after our students came into our classes, they were then asking, "Great, what's next?" So we also realized what's next. And when we looked at it, we realized that actually what they were asking for was, is there some way that I can have support, or at least I know a place where I can get support, and I'm not so alone when I look at these numbers and I just don't come for a class and thank you very much. I think that was what they were asking. So what we did was we created our own value investing club. When we first started, we didn't know what we were going to do, but we just said, look, how do we add value to our members? And that was really it. And from what it became, we actually started sharing. We realized that a lot of the research that we did, we just shared it. But of course, we were not allowed to give buy, sell, hold calls, and we don't do that. So all we did was we give them the facts. So our philosophy is always, well, we give you the facts, you make that decision, right? The decision is based on you, because so many factors that you need to consider yourself. And one of the research that we do, we realized that, hey, you know, at the end of the day, if you look at valuing a company, financial data is great, but what financial data lacks is context to the numbers, right? And when we talk about context, we're saying, you know, what business is this guy in, or what business is this in, therefore how do he generate his revenue, right? But ultimately, if like a lot of investors, you know, we like to try and forecast at least going forward, but forecasting can only come not just by purely looking at numbers, but understanding the context of the business. But context of the business only can come about when you know the strategy of the business.
Right.
What's the strategy, right?
Okay.
Say example, say for airlines example, you know, Asia is very clear, they are low cost, not more than four hours kind of point-to-point business, right? And with that context, you know that strategy, so that your research can go around that strategy, right?
I see. Okay.
So that's why we decided when we cover good companies, we try and get the CEOs on stage, right, the same stage here, and talk about context, right? Talk about the strategy, right?
Right.
Because so, everything else is...
It's not just the numbers.
It's not just numbers, right.
Okay, great. Along the way, when you are, transforming the company, becoming more than just a data company, what are some of the major challenges that you have faced in the business?
Actually, the biggest challenge is always internal.
Yeah, okay.
That's how I find. Because we have a fairly young team, mm-hmm. Very driven, very motivated. But you know, when you ask them to go this direction, then suddenly you say, hey, why don't we go this direction? You know, yeah. everyone gets a frazzled, right?
Getting consensus is difficult.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can do the authoritarian style, you know, just do it or else, but I don't think that works.
How do you do it?
it's a lot of dialogue sessions.
Okay.
I guess at some point, because everyone sort of see things at different levels, mm-hmm. so there needs to be a bit of mutual trust and respect.
Okay.
That we've done this before and we can do it, mm-hmm. and our track record says that we can do it. So
right.
let's just be, we could be a bit bold and take the step.
Be more aggressive, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. And I guess along the way, maybe you share with us, not many, say, educators, providers, or data company would try to go the route of initial public offering.
Yeah.
Why don't you share with us the idea? How did the idea came about, and why do you choose to list?
To list, yeah. I think because we've been covering listed companies literally out of the whole company's life, and I guess we have been interacting with public listed companies where we invite the CEOs to come in and speak to our club members.
Yeah.
We see the benefits of being a listed company. I think one of the key benefits is public profiling, mm-hmm. That we get a profile on our business. And I think to be a listed company, number one, I don't think it's that easy.
Yeah.
You require quite a fair bit of things to be correct, to be listed.
Yeah, definitely.
So really, it that allows us to stand out from the rest. Right? So when the idea, when we first started talking about it was at the end of 2016 with my brother, and we talked about getting the company listed. At that time, the idea about the LEAP market had not surfaced yet, and we were just talking about it. And then we had sessions with the stock exchange, just a dialogue to ask them to understand a little bit more, and they were quite business friendly.
Okay,
when they spoke to us. So what happened was when we actually spoke to the when we sort of looked through the whole process and try to understand the whole process of it, the cost, the time, and everything else, I think when we announced it to the team, they were all very excited, of course. They were all very excited. I guess some of them had questions like, what would change, will anything change?
Say if today we have many other, say, business owner, SME business owner, looking at this podcast. Would you advise them to go listing, if they come and seek your advice on it? What would you tell them?
I think you need to have a very good reason why you want to get listed. If it's purely capital, then I think there's so many ways to get capital. Mm. But you need to have a very strong underlying reason why you want to go public, and also understand the responsibilities that comes with being a public company. Mm. Yeah. And if you've got a very solid underlying reason or fundamental reason why you want to do that, then I would say, yeah, definitely go for it. Mm-hmm. It really, really, in my opinion, it would put you aside from the crowd. It also creates a better profiling, but you need to take advantage of that profiling.
See. Okay, good. So if you are thinking of going down the IPO road, give Alvin a call.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, but of course, when you talk about once you being a listed company, you have added responsibility, and to many investors looking at the stock market, one of the key responsibility for a lot of listed company is growth, right?
Yeah.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit, how is Equities Tracker planning to grow after the listing?
Okay. Actually, when we talk about, say, the data business and the education business, they're quite symbiotic.
Mm-hmm.
We realize that if you look at the whole of ASEAN. Right now, we cover about 900, and we cover all of the Malaysian stocks in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. We cover all Singapore stocks, 700 plus. We cover 600 of Australian Stock Exchange.
Okay.
The top 600. And the top 600 represent more than 95% of market cap, so okay. Quite a fair bit. And when we looked at this region, I think there's so much capacity for growth, right? For example, if you look at the Yangon Stock Exchange, which is very new, they only got 5 stocks that are listed, right? Mm. And we looked around all the other stock exchanges, we realized that as an ASEAN sort of play, if you look at in the next 10, 15 years, of course ASEAN will have its up and downs, but ASEAN will likely be a very strong emerging market.
Right.
And I don't think, regardless, you know, the world is getting smaller, right, with the internet, mm-hmm. right? I think regardless where you are based, as an investor, you definitely don't want to miss out on the ASEAN growth story.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So we're positioning ourselves so that we become the experts, right?
Around the region.
Around the region.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
That's for the data side. So of course, education will go with it. And one of the things that we are exploring is something that you can do digitally. Webinars. So that I think like the world is getting smaller, you don't have to be at one physical place to actually learn, right? Exactly what we're doing now.
Oh, wonderful. So once again, I just want to congratulate you
on
your successful IPO on the LEAP market on Bursa.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you so much for your time. This is Alvin Vong, the CEO of Equities Tracker, and a very exciting time for them in the future.
Thank you, Stanley. Thank you so much.
So that's it from us for this episode of the Asian Mavericks. If you have enjoyed that, do give us a like, leave us a comment, or even better, share it with your friends. It will greatly help other people discover this show. If you know of any interesting founders that we should be interviewing as well, do give us a message through our Facebook page or YouTube channel. We love to learn more. My name is Stanley from Value Invest Asia. Thank you, and invest safely.